Our next case this morning is Episcopo against General Motors.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Jason Bruce.
Mr. Bruce.
And I represent the plaintiff appellant in this matter, Nick Episcopo.
If you would raise your voice, we would all appreciate it.
Yes, Your Honors. This appeal is an appeal of the entry of summary judgment on a Title VII case by Judge Plunkett. The gravamen of Mr. Episcopo's claim was that his direct supervisor targeted a pre-existing shoulder condition and that this was motivated by animus towards his national origin. The trial court disregarded this and focused merely on verbal antagonism, and that, Your Honors, was error. The basis that the trial court gave for disregarding the work assignments which targeted Mr. Episcopo's shoulder were that there were some, that the most compelling evidence of that was cited in the brief, but not in the statement of material facts. But even if we disregard the portions and the pleadings which were not in both the statement of material facts and the brief, there remains sufficient testimony in both the brief and the statement to support this targeted work, that these work assignments targeted the pre-existing shoulder condition. For this reason, the trial court's whole decision to ignore that testimony was erroneous. And when you consider those work assignments, that furnished the frequency and severity to create a hostile work environment. So for that reason, Your Honor, Judge Plunkett's ruling was erroneous. Secondly, to support the notion that these malicious work assignments were motivated by an animus towards the plaintiff's national origin, we cited his supervisor's direct testimony that he had used the term displaced persons. The trial court failed to consider this on the basis that it was pre-limitations conduct. But as the Supreme Court has noted in National Railroad Passenger Corporation versus Morgan, it's entirely appropriate to consider pre-limitations conduct as background evidence. We made that argument in the trial court, although we didn't cite Morgan. We indicated that it was, as a matter of evidence, admissible. Therefore, the trial court's decision to ignore that was erroneous. Third, we also argued that Mr. Episcopo's co-workers' activities, Mr. Monsinski, could be furnished evidence that his work environment was the hostility in his work environment was motivated by national origin. The evidence, the record is replete with derogatory references by Mr. Monsinski. The repeated nature of those references, it was ongoing for close to a year, is evidence of management knowledge. That's also another holding in Morgan. So that the mere fact that it was repeated and it went on for a long time is sufficient to impute Mr. Monsinski's actions to management. Furthermore, there's a circumstantial connection between Mr. Monsinski's behavior and that of his supervisor, Mr. Hanley. The extreme beginning of the antagonism between Mr. Monsinski and Mr. Episcopo began after an incident, the displaced persons incident between Mr. Episcopo and a supervisor, and it ended when Mr. Hanley retired. So the timing of the beginning and ending of it is circumstantial evidence of a connection between Mr. Hanley and Mr. Monsinski. And that is also evidence of animus based upon national origin. Finally, on that point, Your Honors, the EEOC's determination that General Motors discriminated against Mr. Episcopo individually and against Italians as a class furnishes sufficient basis to create a genuine issue of material fact on that question. Fourth, trial court entered summary judgment on defendants Farragher Ellerith affirmative defense, and that was a misapplication of the burden of proof and production. That current case law in this circuit requires the defendant to come forward with evidence that the employer has an effective grievance mechanism. It's not enough just to point to the existence of that grievance mechanism. That's what defendant did. They said, we've got a grievance mechanism. That's not enough. But beyond that, there's evidence that the existing grievance mechanism was ineffective. The record is clear that Mr. Episcopo repeatedly asked his union representative to file an grievance. None was filed. The only time that a grievance was filed was after Mr. Episcopo filed an EEOC complaint, and therefore there was scrutiny. Once Mr. Episcopo did file that grievance, the management just summarily denied it. The union contract is very clear that there's a requirement that an independent medical opinion be solicited, and that that independent medical opinion would be binding. Management just disregarded that. It went up to the second stage. That management decision was affirmed. It went up to the third stage, and that was affirmed. And it did not go to the fourth stage, which significantly would be arbitration outside of the company. And that's significant because that's proof that the management grievance mechanism is ineffective. The grievance was sent back to the second stage, where it remained in limbo. So for that reason, there's no effective grievance mechanism. Therefore, the trial court erred when it entered summary judgment on the Farragher-Ellerith affirmative defense. Two final points. The record is also clear that the defendant's ADAP committee process was circumvented by Mr. Episcopo's supervisor. The ADAP committee was specifically designed to give Mr. Episcopo the protection which he needed and which he requested, and that was denied. Evidence is also undisputed that Mr. Episcopo's supervisor lied to both ADAP, or lied to the ADAP committee, and therein frustrated its attempts to protect Mr. Episcopo. And finally, the union contract gives Mr. Episcopo the right to an independent medical opinion. That was not obtained. Over and apart from whether the grievance mechanism was sufficient, the failure to abide and give Mr. Episcopo an independent medical opinion shows that his work environment was objectively hostile. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Bruce. Ms. Hamilton.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Heather Hamilton, and I represent the defendant appellee, General Motors Corporation. GM moved for summary judgment on numerous claims brought by plaintiff in the district court, which included a failure to accommodate claim under the Americans Disability, as well as the hostile work environment claim that is the subject of this appeal. The fact that the district court dismissed plaintiff's ADA claim is critical when plaintiff's hostile work environment claim is considered. Plaintiff admitted in his brief and in this oral argument that the gravamen of his hostile work environment claim is his supervisor's alleged failure to honor his medical restrictions. However, this alleged failure to honor the restrictions is irrelevant for two reasons. First and foremost, the record in this case shows that plaintiff was never required to perform jobs outside of any medical restrictions. His supervisor, Jerry Hanley, supervised him for 14 months. Under the collective bargaining agreement, GM supervisors can only honor medical restrictions that are issued by GM's medical department. In this 14-month period, Mr. Episcopo only had medical restrictions in place for 3 weeks. It was impossible for Mr. Hanley to give plaintiff assignments which exceeded medical restrictions he did not have. Second of all, the incidents cited by plaintiff do not support his argument that Mr. Hanley made him perform jobs that he felt unable to perform. And contrary to appellant's argument, this is addressed at pages 4 through 6 of the district court opinion. In GM's statement of facts and in the opinion, it is noted that Mr. Hanley told plaintiff that he could ask other employees for help if he felt an object was too heavy. Mr. Hanley directed other employees to help plaintiff. GM installed a special crane in the work area to help him lift heavier objects. And most important, plaintiff admitted in his deposition that each time he was given a job assignment that he felt unable to perform, he would refuse to do the job. Under the provisions of the collective bargaining agreement, Mr. Hanley could have disciplined plaintiff for his refusal, but he never did. He simply let plaintiff refuse to do jobs he felt uncomfortable performing. Plaintiff argues that the ADAP committee was somehow involved and related to his discrimination claim. His argument misconstrues what the ADAP committee is about. ADAP stands for Accommodating Disabled Persons in Transition. It's a work committee that the GM and the UAW established through the collective bargaining agreement. This basically, when an employee has a medical restriction issued by GM's medical department, they come to the committee and the committee attempts to place the employee in a job they can perform with their medical restrictions. As I stated earlier, Mr. Episcopo only had medical restrictions in place for 3 weeks, and his medical restrictions were honored. There were no other medical restrictions that were the focus of the ADAP committee. In addition, the ADAP committee was not, Mr. Hanley was not a member of the ADAP committee, and there are no allegations by plaintiff that any member of the ADAP committee discriminated against him on the basis of his national origin. More important here is the fact that there was no evidence in this case that the job assignments were due to plaintiff's national origin. Plaintiff misrepresents the record in this case regarding the use of the term displaced persons. He first relies on a May 1995 conversation where the term displaced persons was used by some person who plaintiff could not identify. Mr. Hanley testified without contradiction in his deposition that he was not the one that used the term and, in fact, never even heard the term being used. Plaintiff asked Mr. Hanley in his deposition if he had ever used the term displaced persons at any time in his life. Mr. Hanley said yes. This does not show that he used the term in the workplace. This does not show that he used the term directed toward plaintiff and is not evidence of national origin discrimination against plaintiff. Plaintiff also attempts to rely on the use, Mr. Hanley's presence in the conversation where the term displaced persons was used in May 1995, 5.5 years before he filed his EEOC charge, to show a connection to Mr. Munzinski's conduct, who was an hourly coworker. However, Mr. Hanley did not supervise Mr. Munzinski or plaintiff during this May 1995 conversation. In fact, did not supervise him for another 5 years after this comment was made. That comment cannot be used to establish any sort of connection. In addition, when you look at the conduct which Mr. Episcopo complains about with regard to Mr. Munzinski, the uncontroverted evidence shows that Mr. Hanley never heard or saw Mr. Munzinski engage in any discriminatory conduct towards plaintiff. Basically, it was a childish dispute between two coworkers. They complained about things like sunflower seeds being left in work areas, chairs being pushed in front of one another. GM tried to address their personality conflict and met with both of them. However, Mr. Episcopo never filed any grievance or made any complaint with anyone at GM that he felt Mr. Munzinski's actions towards him were based on his national origin. Likewise, he made no such complaints against Mr. Hanley. Finally, plaintiff points to the EEOC's finding of probable cause in this case, an attempt to rescue his national origin discrimination claim. In Young, 327 F3rd 616, the Seventh Circuit held that EEOC findings are not even admissible at trial where they're unreliable. That's the exact situation we have here. The EEOC relied primarily on the testimony of one of plaintiff's hourly co-workers, Ron Spagnola. Mr. Spagnola admitted in his deposition under oath that he had lied to the EEOC and that the conduct that he told the EEOC had occurred in support of Mr. Episcopo's national discrimination claim, in fact, had never occurred. The conduct cited by plaintiff is simply insufficient to support his hostile work environment claim. There's no evidence Mr. Hanley treated plaintiff differently because of his national origin. The evidence shows Mr. Hanley had a good working relationship with other Italian employees. Plaintiff retired after 30 years of employment. He's currently receiving full retirement benefits, and he was never subjected to any adverse action during his employment by Mr. Hanley. Plaintiff's personality conflict with Mr. Munzinski and Mr. Hanley is not evidence of discrimination and may not be used to support his hostile work environment claim. The decision of the district court dismissing the hostile work environment claim should also be affirmed on the basis of the Farragher-Ellerith affirmative defense. Plaintiff was aware that GM's policies prohibited discrimination and harassment in the workplace, and he understood the reporting mechanisms. In fact, plaintiff filed a grievance in 1977 alleging national origin discrimination. However, after 1977, plaintiff never again filed any grievance alleging national origin discrimination. Plaintiff attempts to rely on a grievance he filed relating to his medical restrictions seeking an independent medical examination to show these policies are ineffective. This argument fails for numerous reasons. First, the request for an IME never requested or made any allegations pertaining to any discrimination complaint. Second, the collective bargaining agreement placed the onus on plaintiff to pursue his grievance. The grievance was referred from the third step back to the second step. There's absolutely no evidence in the record that plaintiff made any efforts to pursue his grievance after this point in time. Finally, the grievance procedure provided for in the collective bargaining agreement is only one of several ways in which an employee can make complaints of discrimination. Mr. Episcopo could have went to his supervisor, he could have went to a superintendent, he could have went to the personnel representative. However, he never did. He told a few supervisors he, quote, had a problem with Mr. Hanley, but never told them the problem involved any sort of allegations of discriminatory conduct. And as I stated early, he never filed any grievance alleging national origin discrimination by Mr. Hanley, or by Mr. Menzinski for that matter. GM was unable to remedy conduct of which it was unaware. His failure to utilize GM's policies prohibiting discrimination in the workplace is an additional reason the district court's opinion should be affirmed. And one final point I want to point out with relation to the Farragher-Ellerith defense, plaintiff alleges that he made complaints to his union representative that he felt he was being discriminated against. Union representatives at GM are hourly workers. This is not a GM manager. GM is simply not responsible for the failure of the union to file a grievance on behalf of Mr. Episcopo. For these reasons, as more fully set out in our brief, GM requests that the district court's order dismissing plaintiff's hostile work environment claim be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Hamilton. Anything further, Mr. Bruce?
Yes. Your Honor, this matter is not about sunflower seeds. It's about the destruction of Mr. Episcopo's shoulder. His supervisor put him on the largest machines in the plant. It's not true that Mr. Episcopo refused to do assignments which were dangerous. He got help from other people, or he struggled out by himself and let other people come and help him. In any event, if he had to rely on the help of other people, that is a humiliation which affects the terms and conditions of his work environment and supports his claim. The dismissal of the ADA claim has no effect on what factual arguments we can raise on appeal. The term failure to accommodate has legal significance under the ADA, but not when used in general English usage. Mr. Episcopo only had medical restrictions for 3 weeks because because Mr. Hanley frustrated his attempts to get medical restrictions beyond that. What's important is that he had medical restrictions from March to April, those 3 weeks, and then he had medical restrictions from July of 2001 to July of 2002, so a whole year after. So the period during which he had no medical restrictions was sandwiched between periods in which he had medical restrictions, which indicates that he should have had medical restrictions the whole time. The fact that he was denied those medical restrictions he should have had is the basis of this claim. With respect to the displaced persons comment, it is relevant because it's from Mr. Hanley himself, his own mouth, and it indicates an animus towards immigrants. And again, the ADAP committee, with respect to counsel's argument about the EEOC, that was an argument that was never raised in the trial court. Counsel put that at the back page of her response to my statement of material facts, and it's also wrong as a factual matter. The EEOC findings are admissible. A particular witness's testimony was excluded by virtue of a motion in limine in the Young case. It does not hold that in general EEOC findings are inadmissible or unreliable. It has to be a fact-by-fact determination, and that's what happened in the Young case. That did not happen in this case. And the EEOC considered a panoply of witnesses that didn't just rely on one person, who I might add, the circumstances which have suggested that he changed his testimony because he was intimidated.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. The case is taken under advisement. Our fourth case.